Have you ever wondered if your project management style is holding you back? What if I told you that the way that you're leading the team is the very thing that's preventing you from reaching the next level? In today's episode, we're going to break down the unconventional secrets project managers use to get better in project management. Trust me, some of these tips within today's tutorial are known. But as you guys know, what is known is sometimes rarely used. Do you mind if I share a story with you? You see, I was taking over a project from a previous project manager. And tip number three is what helped me understand that this was an area that I had to work on. And boy, did I have to work on it fast. See, family, this is what it was. I got the project, no project charter. I got the project, no project schedule. I got the project, no risk register. I got the project, family, and the teams were working in silos. Well, you're like, well, that's good, ED. I mean, now you get to start from scratch and you get to do everything, you know, the way that you want to do it. Exactly, but not exactly. You see, family, the thing of it was is that this project has been in flight for 6 months, meaning that this project has been going on for 6 months and we only had 6 months to deliver. We're already 6 months behind. So I had to make a quick decision. And if I'm going to be transparent, because we're family, right? You don't mind if I be transparent with you. This is a safe place, right? I was frustrated. No, let me put a better word. I was irritated because at minimum, the project charter wasn't done to at least give me a concept of what we were trying to do. So I'm working, and then on top of that, the teams were working in silos. They didn't really want to collaborate. No, actually, they did not want to collaborate. And having to figure out a way, this is why I say tip number three, family, if you stay to tip number three, it's going to be worth it. It's so important. But even more important, the first tip was even more important than that. So this whole episode today is going to be so transparent, and I hope it can really help a project manager, because what it showed me is that sometimes you're not going to have all the pieces. Sometimes you're going to have to be so adaptable and figure it out as you go along. And let me be honest with you, family. At the end of the day, once we got the project up to where it needed to be and even exceeded that, it was, when you look back at it, and when I look back at it, and the team looked back at it, it was such an enjoyable ride. It wasn't at the beginning. I'm not going to fool you. I'm not going to lie to you and say, yeah, this was just, I had an amazing time. No. Because then that wouldn't be me. That wouldn't be me being transparent with you. It was an enjoyable ride once we started gelling together, once we start collaborating together. And then once I did two things really. First, which leads me into point number one, I led through influence, not authority. Again, I led through influence, not authority. See, true leadership, if we're going to be clear and be honest, is about commanding authority, about inspiring others to follow the influence through influence. Project managers who focus on influence without relying on their title foster more collaborative and autonomous teams. See, family, like I shared in that story, I could have used my title to say, well, we need to do this, we need to do that, instead of saying, hey guys, how can I help you guys? Because we're already 6 months behind. Let's work together. Let's find out what we can collaborate on. Let's find out. I know it's not in my job title. I know this is what they say I'm here to do, but I have to look past that. If I'm willing to look past it, I hope that you are willing to look past it. That is leading through influence, professional insight. Develop a leadership style rooted in influence by building a genuine relationship. You know, that's one of the other key points is I develop a genuine relationship with people. Instead of always, even though the project was where it was at, I was building a genuine relationship, asking them questions about their family. Hey, what's the last book you read? What book are you reading currently? These type of things like that. And then leveraging each one of their experiences, or I should say expertise. And we went straight into action, and I gave credit generously, and I empowered the team to take ownership and make decisions and not choices on all initiatives. See, we can't allow someone to make a choice. We have to make them to make a decision, because we know when we make a decision, we've already cut off all of the choices that there are available. Point number two, foster psychological safety for radical candor. Teams perform best when they feel safe to speak up without fear of retribution. How many times will you hear that cliche, oh, we have an open door policy, and you go in there, you have a candid professional conversation, and then next thing you know, retribution is coming. That's why I thank the organizations and the leaders that allowed me to have a candid, be very candor, or I should say, to be very candid with my conversation, as long as, of course, I was respectful and professional. And they actually took action. They just didn't sit on the information and say, okay, well, we let this person vent. No, they actually took action. And I appreciate those organizations, especially those leaders, because the leaders, the organization wouldn't be anything without effective and influential leaders. So here's my professional insight. Introduce a fearless feedback session where team members can openly discuss project challenges, ideals, concerns, but the key word is remaining professional. I don't want you to get so emotional, so high up that you can't keep the professional focus, because you always want to attack the work, not the individual. Attack the work, challenge the work. Okay, I probably said that overall. Point number three, what I shared about you with the first story, embrace uncertainty is a strategic advantage. Now, since I've experienced that at the beginning, I'll be honest, I wasn't happy. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy it one iota. But when I embraced the uncertainty, it allowed me to be a better project manager. Rather than seeing uncertainty as a threat, now I view it as an opportunity to explore creative paths forward. And see, that's key, family. When you don't look at this as a threat, when uncertainty rises, when you don't look at it as like, oh, this is the end of the world, and you look at it as an opportunity, like, how am I going to exploit this opportunity? How am I going to take advantage of this opportunity? Because see, this is where you're going to find out where your project team really is. This is where you're going to know who you can count on and who you can count out. I like that, family. Here's my professional insight. Cultivate a flexible project culture by creating innovation zones where team members can exploit alternative solutions to project challenges. Regularly introduce scenarios where team must adapt on the fly to practice thriving in uncertainty. What I'm saying there, family, is more or less of saying, you want to create these moments as if you can, so when it actually truly happens, the team is adapt. The team is ready to step into it instead of step back from it. That is important. You want your team to lean in instead of leaning out. All right, point number four, create a fail forward culture. You know, family, when I was in high school, just like, you know, it's, I guess school in general, it's anytime you got a bad grade, you didn't even look at the learning opportunity, because that was not what was presented. It was more of a presentation of, for me, I'm not speaking for everyone, for me, that, oh, you're a failure, you'll never get this. Versus, okay, I didn't do well here. All right, how am I going to adjust? How am I going to adapt? And for me, when I went to college, that's when I was able to hit that switch, because now I didn't look at it as failure. I looked at it as opportunity. So even in project management, when I failed on certain projects, I didn't look, especially, and only way to do this effectively, you have to have leadership and an organization that supports you 110%. Because if you don't, then you fail, then it's going to be just like what I described about you getting a bad grade in school. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, we don't think this person is going to cut it. So anyway, project managers who create an environment where it's safe to fail encourages great creativity and faster problem solving. Here's my professional insight. Institute a practice of fail forward reviews. Well, failures can be dissected constructively to find, here's the key word, family, learning opportunities, and celebrate those lessons learned from failures just as much as successes. Point number five, build unlearning into your project process. A lot of times what we do as project managers, or just humans in general, when something works well in a certain area, we try to apply that same practice, which, okay, from a common sense standpoint, yeah, that makes sense. But what happens is we don't learn how to pivot, meaning that when we applied what we learned from a previous project and we see it's not working, it's clear as mud, as they say. But no, seriously, it's clear as day that it's not working. We still want to stick with it. I'm like, it's not working. We need to pivot. We need to adjust. We need to adapt. So we have to find new perspective to drive better results. Here's my professional insight. Create moments in the project cycle where teams are, are encouraged to challenge previous assumption and question standard practice. For example, host unlearning sessions to explore how traditional methods may be reimagined. That is the key word, reimagined, meaning how can we transform this? How can we make it more how can we make it better and get better results? Point number six, practice hyper-personalized communication. While tailoring communication style is common, this step here, family, it takes it a little bit deeper. And what I mean by that, hyper-personalized communication goes deeper by addressing, watch this family, team members' unique motivations, stressors, and the main point or the foundation of this all is their communication preference. I always share with you, and I know it's extra work, some people love detailed emails. Some people like high-level emails. Some people would rather be communicated in teams. Some people would rather be get regular updates. Some people would rather, so you get where I'm going with this. So having the ability to keep a communication playbook for each team member, noting their preferences, motivators, and stress signals are going to be key when you're delivering updates, feedback, and then this is just going to resonate well with them. Point number seven, develop situational agility for each project phase. Now, when you are leading a project, you know, most of the times you will hear people say, well, the planning is the most easy, is it just, you know, it gets difficult during the execution because of following up and doing all this. I'm like, no, I disagree with that. The most challenging for me has always been in the planning phases because you have people super excited, and because they're excited, they want to have this expanded scope, and we're not able to do all of that. So trying to get everything boiled down into a manageable scope and then creating a WBS to be reflective of that is key. So in different phases of when you are leading a project, so for instance, in the planning phase, and I'm already in my professional insights, in the planning phase, you want to be more directive, but in the execution phase of it, you want to create a collaborative approach. And reason why I say you want to be directive in planning, just for some additional for me to expound on it a little bit more, is because everybody's going to be all over the place and you want to make sure we can get on track. And the way to get everyone is on track is saying, this is what we're doing and this is how we're moving forward. But when we get to that execution piece, and you have to sell it to them to a way that say, hey, this gives us more time to focus on the execution piece. We can't spend so much time on planning and then we don't do anything. I'm a big proponent on planning, but if we just create a humongous plan and then we realize we got to throw that whole plan out the book, throw the whole plan out, then it was a waste of time. So let's plan as detailed as we can, but then let's start moving forward to execute. Point number eight, develop real-time accountability systems. You know, one of the challenges in project management, maybe someone would come out with a software for this, maybe I may even build one, in traditional project management, holding somebody accountable in real time sometimes can be challenging, especially if you're leading multiple projects or you're so focused in an area that you're like, oh man, I forgot to follow up with this person. Or if you follow up with them multiple times and they're not responding, they're not even saying, hey, we need more time, et cetera. This is why I think real-time accountability systems are one of those things where it would be nice to have a board where it will show the people that are responsible for each task that goes all the way up to the executive leadership, where they're able to see, this even allows them to see the workload. It sees them, hey, somebody made a commitment, not an interest. We all know the difference here. Commitment is saying that I'm cutting off everything else. I'm committed to doing this. The interest is like, well, you know, I'm interested in doing it. It's like somebody telling you, I'm going to try and make the meeting. It's like, okay, how are you going to try or make the meeting? See, this is their way out. And we don't want to build a way out. We want to build a way in. Kind of like that, family. And the reason why I like that is because a lot of times we allow people to try things instead of holding them accountable for doing things. So having real-time accountability, and this is my professional update, insight, encourage a culture where peers check in with each other's progress rather than waiting for the official status meeting. And my bonus for today, family, is leverage peer-to-peer mentorship. What does that look like? I love mentorship. As you guys know, I talk about it all the time. But in a work environment, peer-to-peer mentorship can accelerate learning by fostering quick knowledge sharing. That's really what the peer-to-peer mentorship is about, is fostering quick knowledge sharing. The key words, I should say, is knowledge sharing. So project managers who facilitate peer mentoring see faster skill development within their team. Here's my professional insight. Pair team members who excel in certain areas with others who need to develop those skills. And rotate these mentorship pairing regularly to assure skill diverse and skill development and collaboration. I have one transformational remark for you today, and then I'll let you be on your way. Family, if you don't learn anything else that we talked about today, if you forgot everything that I said starting at point number one, this transformation was two, really, but point number one and three, if you go back and listen, point number one and three are two major items you really want to learn. You're never going to master it, but continually to get better. And I'm going to give you number one. Leading through influence, not authority. Again, leading through influence, not authority. When you get this opportunity to fall in love with this thing that I love, that I hope you fall in love with, called project management, leadership is not about commanding authority. It's really about inspiring others through influence. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I go by the name AD. For you smart and intelligent folks out there, listen, that just simply means Ed. Until next time.